Hello, and welcome to Just a Fashion Minute with me, David M. Watts. This is more than a podcast, it's a movement. A call to redefine fashion and spotlight the talent that's shaping its future. This is Just a Fashion Minute with me, David M. Watts. In our last podcast, I spoke to Melanie and Ricky about overconsumption and the concept of enoughness. It was an incredible conversation. If you haven't already, go back and give it a try. This week, we're joined by the multi-talented Simon Frederick, a renowned photographer, filmmaker, and producer. Today, we delve into the underappreciated power of Black audiences in television and media, exploring why the industry has been slow to recognize their influence, not just in fashion, but across all sectors. Simon shares his insights on this topic, his journey in photography and film, and his thoughts on the evolving landscape of fashion films. Stay tuned as we uncover the challenges and successes of creating content that truly represents the diversity of audiences. But as always, let's kick the show off with my Just a Fashion Minute Roundup. Filmmaker and director Kevin MacDonald brings a new documentary biopic entitled High and Low about the famous and somewhat infamous fashion designer John Galliano. A sort of confessional, this documentary touches on the meteoric rise of Galliano and the very public fall from grace when he had a public meltdown in Paris and went on an anti-Semitic rampage. It cost him almost everything, his career, the job at Dior, as well as being outcast by the fashion establishment, and a lawsuit followed. The documentary is not really about forgiveness, because there are many people who don't believe he should be excused or forgiven, but for Galliano to be given an opportunity to speak his truth. The documentary is now on general release. Moschino, the slightly irreverent and quirky Italian brand owned by the AFA Group, has recently appointed Adrian Appiolaza to the top creative job as creative director. An Argentine who is based in Paris has had an illustrious career, having first been talent spotted by Phoebe Philo, she of old Celine fame, who after seeing his graduate show in 2002, then invited him to join her at Chloe, where she was design director. Fast forward to roles with Mrs. Prada at the Prada Group, and more recently a decade as design director at Loewe, working alongside J.W. Anderson. Having seen his personal Instagram, there is no doubt in my mind that this designer has a very unique vision and could be a brilliant fit for Moschino, which has lost a lot of its original magic under the stewardship of American designer Jeremy Scott, who some might say just ran out of steam at Moschino. Looking at Appiolaza's piercings, tattoos, and dress sense, he certainly is unique for sure. He's a big collector of the avant-garde Japanese designers and apparently has his own archive built up over years of collecting. We feel at the moment creativity is sadly lacking in too many fashion collections, but hopefully Moschino is about to have its world rocked by this talented designer. Cindy, Linda, Carolyn, Amber, and Shalom. These supermodels are all famous enough to simply go by their first names. They've all appeared in the big splashy ad campaign announcing the relaunch of Dana Karen New York, with a collection that takes its cues from the designer's highly successful Seven Easy Pieces. The fashion brand made famous by Dana Karen herself in the mid-80s was sold to G3 Apparel Group in 2016, who planned to launch the new collection designed by an in-house team. The brand was hugely successful in the 80s, but started to lose its luster even though LVMH had bought the business in 2001, but ultimately sold it again in 2016. It's a very interesting point that LVMH, who have incredibly deep pockets and can keep any of its not so high profile fashion brands ticking over, decided to sell Donna Karan. The brand had some memorable ad campaigns fronted by the hottest couple in Hollywood at the time, Bruce Willis and Demi Moore. It will now be interesting to see if they can successfully reposition this iconic brand in a very crowded fashion market without Karen herself at the helm. With the proliferation of high jewelry from most of the luxury fashion houses, the newest arrival on New York's Fifth Avenue is Chanel. Gabrielle Chanel started making jewelry and costumes for the Hollywood movie mogul Samuel Goldwyn in the 1930s. This new dedicated watch and jewelry salon, designed in collaboration with famed architect Peter Marino, is a positively glittering palace of gold. Merino is the now famous, in fashion industry circles, as the black leather-clad edgy architect who's worked on many of the recent luxury retail stores, Bulgari, Chanel, Louis Vuitton, just to name a few of the clients. This new Chanel boutique has some lovely chinoiserie touches that are reminiscent of the 1930s Art Deco period, and it's likely to attract that 1% of high net worth New Yorkers and travelers, no doubt. Welcome to the show, Simon Frederick. It is a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
It's been quite a journey, the J word, getting here, considering probably 2.5 years ago, we had our Sunday afternoon conversations in lockdown, at which point I said, I want to do a podcast. And you said, yes, you should do it. It would be good. We should talk. Fast forward 2.5 years later, you're sitting in the chair.
It is a full circle moment.
It's amazing.
Or as you call it, just a fashion minute moment.
Just a fashion minute moment. Great to have you here. So, Simon, before we get started, do you have any thoughts on our Just a Fashion Minute roundup this week?
I think it's quite interesting, the Moschino, the new fashion director there. I like the fact that he is a bit irreverent, a bit different. I also like the fact that he has quite an extensive archive of Japanese influence fashion. I'm influenced by Japanese fashion myself. I've come here today wearing, of course, one of my favorite designers.
We'll come to that later.
Okay.
Hold that thought.
I will indeed. But I just thought that was, for me personally, was the standout news.
Fantastic. So today we're going to talk about television and media in general. It has been slow to appreciate the power of Black audiences. Simon and I will be exploring this later. But before we dive into this, tell me, did you start out your career interested in photography or fashion?
I've always had an interest in fashion. Vicariously, there was an interest in photography because the magazines I was looking at, all of the imagery was, of course, fashion photography. I wasn't aware back then of the fashion photographers or, in fact, why I was so enamored by the imagery that I was looking at. Now I'm older and I'm now involved in the industry, I can understand now why the imagery was touching me in the way that it was. But back then, no, I was very much interested in what people were wearing, what they looked like, how they held themselves, composition, color, texture. Those were the things that I was very much interested in.
So tell me, Simon, what were some of those images that inspired you?
As a kid growing up in Shepherd's Bush, West London, big up West London. Now I live in North London, so big up North London. Magazines like Vogue were at the time kind of like out of my reach. The imagery in there didn't appeal to me because I didn't see myself reflected in those. So I started to pick up on magazines like The Face back in the day. Also Black magazines like Ebony and Essence, and some of the really striking Black models that are around at the time, you know, like Tyson Gibson and people like that. I suppose that was the type of imagery that has really inspired a lot of my work going forward.
Now, something that's interesting, and I was actually there this weekend, your photography is in the permanent collection of the National Portrait Gallery here in London. How does that make you feel?
Of course, I'm proud. What makes me even prouder is when it comes to having your portrait made and placed within the permanent collection of the National Portrait Gallery, there is a huge connotation to that, that people see that as really a recognition of their achievements within this country. You know, I often call the National Portrait Gallery, I have a nickname for it, I call it the family album of our nation's achievers. For me, you know, when I first went in there and I had the meeting with the previous director of the museum, Sandy Nain, and I said to Sandy, look, you know, it's like I've grown up in this country. I've seen lots of people who have achieved and are achieving who are not white. But when it comes to your cousins, why is there no representation of your cousins within this establishment? And I remember in that meeting saying something quite profound to him, and I can't remember where the hell I dug this up from, but I remembered it ever since. And it was a saying that I heard that you can tell the ambitions of a nation by the types of people it chooses to place on the walls of its institutions. And I thought, okay, if these are the people that you are choosing to put on the walls of your institutions as a representation of our nation, but you are excluding many people who are a representation of our nation from having that kind of representation in our institutions, then what does that say about you?
Who are those people that you think are included or the people that are being excluded?
I'll give an example. The National Portrait Gallery spent 3 years being refurbished, and myself and my wife were really excited to be invited to the reopening of the gallery. I walked in excited, I left disappointed. The reason I left disappointed is because my collection in the National Portrait Gallery is very high profile. It's made up of a great deal of high profile people. And as we also know, they're very proud of the fact that their portraits are in the National Portrait Gallery. Let me go off on a tangent to come back to the story. 2019, I received a phone call from a prominent friend of mine. His name is Mervyn Lynn, and he used to be head of black music at Sony Records here in Britain. And he called me and he said, Stevie Wonder's sons are in town and they want to go and see your portraits in the National Portrait Gallery. Now, I mentioned that because this is the global appeal that having these portraits of black people have on the global diaspora, okay, where someone as prominent, as high profile as Stevie Wonder, right, is saying, my sons are in London, want to go to see Simon Frederick's portraits in the National Portrait Gallery.
Great indeed.
Now, I mentioned that because, as I said to you, we walked into the night of the relaunch happy, and we walked out disappointed. The reason being is this, is that my portrait of Naomi Campbell has been toured by the National Portrait Gallery around the world several times in several collections. Sometimes when you go onto the site, it's the first thing that you see. It's been used as a promotion for the National Portrait Gallery. That portrait wasn't on show. None of my portraits were on show during that night of the relaunch. In fact, what I would go as far as to say that the representation that night wasn't of a multicultural Britain at all. It was very white. Yeah. It seemed like for the reopening, the National Portrait Gallery had gone back to type.
Which is a shame.
There were many people who were coming up to me that night saying, where's your work? That's a lot of portraits in a collection for not one of them to be included when one of them is always used to promote the gallery.
It seems to be going backwards, the diversity, the inclusion.
I think that we're in a post-George Floyd moment where powers that be are saying, okay, guys, we did our thing. You've had your moment. It's time to move on. When we talk about certain things in the fashion industry, we talk about black being the new black, right? Which is what I called my show. And anecdotally, again, when I called the show that, for a long time, the BBC wanted to commission it, but were afraid of the name. They were saying things to me like, but Simon, the name has got the word black in it twice. And some people may find that a little bit hostile. I was like, really? But why? After all, wasn't it Coco Chanel that said, a woman must always have a little black dress and a little black jacket in her wardrobe because black will always be the new black.
Brilliant. The work that's in the permanent collection of the National Portrait Gallery, what portraits did it comprise of?
After the meeting I had with Sandy Nairn, I said that I was going to actually go out and start making portraits of prominent black British successful people. One of the first people I gathered was Oswald Botang. And then Oswald helped me to gather other prominent people. And I realized in shooting those portraits that the stories that people were telling me, I thought to myself, I can't be the only person to hear that. So we stopped doing the photographic side of it, and I decided I was going to turn it into a documentary. That documentary became a very successful documentary called Black is the New Black.
And that was for the BBC?
It was for the BBC. For example, Naomi Campbell at the time, no one had really heard Naomi talk. Naomi had been characterized as being the angry black woman, and that's how people saw her. But when they saw her on Black is the New Black, I remember one of the episodes, Naomi turns around and she says, not every day is great. Not every day is happy, happy, happy. And I don't want people to conceive me of this way. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down. I'm not depressive, but not every day I look in the mirror and I like what I see. And so many women were like, oh my God, that's how I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. So suddenly it humanized her. I think that that documentary allowed people to understand how we feel as Black people, especially when you've got people like Sir Trevor MacDonald and whatever, people that we've grown up with, hearing them speak on topics that we've never heard them speak on before. So in terms of the collection in the National Portrait Gallery, the collection is nearly 50 portraits of prominent people. It made history as the largest acquisition of African Caribbean sitters to be acquired by the National Portrait Gallery into its permanent collection. It was historic. Going back to the history of it, and you asked me earlier, am I proud? Yes, I'm proud of it. But what I'm more proud of is the people who still every day come up to me and say, thank you for doing what you're doing for us. And thank you for making me feel represented. I think that there's no higher accolade than that, to have people that you've never met before coming up to you on the street and telling you that.
Representation is important, as we keep saying. That's extraordinary. By the way, I'm still waiting for my portrait.
So I also get that as well.
My quote to all those people who shut the door in my face, I'm coming back to buy the building. Has anybody closed the door in your face?
Many a time. And my quote to that isn't, I'm coming back to buy the building, but I'm coming back to burn the fucking building down.
Okay, then. Before we take a break, I want to ask you the question I ask all my guests. How do you define fashion?
That's a big question. For me, that's like asking me, do I believe in God and what's my religion? Because the two are completely separate. So fashion, and then there's style. And the two are not sometimes connected. Some people think that if they are fashionable, they have style. I think that there is the industry of fashion, you know, where we buy clothes from the high street. But I think that there are, I suppose, people like myself. I'm putting myself in this category where I go, people are always interested in what I'm wearing and how I wear it. And I think that style cannot be, I think, defined solely by just saying that somebody is fashionable. You know, there is something about carrying yourself in a stylish way. I don't think you can buy style.
Can you learn style?
I think you can. In The Outsiders, my documentary that's currently on Netflix, there is the model, Sean. And I remember interviewing him and he looked incredible. And I said to him, what are you wearing? And he said, I'm wearing Zara. From head to toe. He looked like he was wearing Prada or Gucci from head to toe. Yeah. It's the way that he wore it, you know, his elegance, the way that he walks, the way that he moves, the way that the clothes move on him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You think that he's wearing high fashion all of the time.
Style and fashion. Which one is God and which one is religion?
God is style and religion is fashion. Fashion is what you follow. Style is spiritual. It is the all-encompassing.
Let's get to our topic this week, which is about television and media in general. It has been slow to appreciate the power of Black audiences. This is not only in fashion, but all across the board. So, Simon, tell me, we know the fashion industry has a diversity and representation problem. Is it similar in your world?
Okay, so here's the thing. There's a lot of talk about diversity and inclusion. Usually that talk is led by corporations. That talk is actually led by white people within the corporations and not people of color within the corporations. It's a big subject for me because I think that within the television and film industry, we are literally missing out on what could be a multi-billion dollar industry. I say that because pop culture is Black culture the world over, in sport, in entertainment, in fashion, in the arts. We all know this, and I often ask myself why it is that knowing what we know about the pervasiveness of Black culture, its ability to generate vast revenues, why it is that no major studio, no major broadcaster, no major producer, no major television station has ever said, do you know what, let's take a vast sum of our budget and focus on Black storytelling. But the problem is that what we have is people commissioning that commission through a very, very narrow set of parameters. They think that by commissioning a story, which is about a Black story, and I want to quantify that as well, because as a Black man, I'm always going to tell Black stories. Why? Because I'm not white. Yeah. So that's the way that I term it. I tell Black stories because I'm a Black man. But the fact that I tell those stories, they are not aimed at or just limited to Black people. Why? Because we know, the research shows us, that Black stories are no longer just attributable to only Black people, right? There are lots of other people who are now watching those stories. Case in question, 2018, Moonlight by Barry Jenkins, winning Best Movie.
Yeah, at the Oscars.
At the Oscars. Now, I remember walking into Whiteley's in Stratford with my friend, the great street fashion photographer known as Mode Hunter, Daryl Hunter, us walking into that cinema and walking out again because we thought we were going to see a Black film, right? And when we walked in, entire cinema was filled with white people. And we walked back out, we checked the ticket, we walked back in again, and we spent about 15 to 20 minutes not watching the movie, but we're looking at the reactions of the people in the film. And it's that that caused me to write my documentary, They've Gotta Have Us, because I realized that I had drunk the Kool-Aid and believed that a Black film was only attributed to Black people,
audiences.
To Black audiences. And in that year, you had Moonlight and you had Get Out, which were the big films of the year. And then, of course, you had Black Panther. They changed the game because audiences had decided that what they wanted was stories. Stories that took them on a journey, right? That made them laugh, that made them cry, that they could fall in love with. And those stories had no color. The industry, however, right, has still entrenched itself in this thinking, which is actually closing the doors to the audience. And the audiences are not happy. What they're showing in their lack of awareness of what actually is happening in the marketplace is they're showing their cultural illiteracy.
You have had amazing successes with your film series, such as Black is the New Black, They Gotta Have Us, which you mentioned, The Outsiders, being shown on the BBC, YouTube Originals, and Netflix. Are you moving the needle?
Someone's got to.
Well, we hope it continues to push the needle even further. Now, one of my favorite categories, fashion films. It has become such an important category on their own, in the same way that fashion exhibitions in museums, Alexander McQueen, Dior, Chanel, have become blockbuster shows. Do you have any plans to perhaps make a fashion film in the future?
I do, actually. This year, I think it may even be next year, will be the 30th anniversary of Oswald Boateng being on Savile Row. And that in of itself is a huge achievement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to tell his story and do a really beautiful fashion documentary about Savile Row, about Oswald Boateng, but also using Oswald Boateng as a catalyst to really talk about how men's tailoring has gone from being talked about as men's tailoring to men's fashion and men's style. For a long time, there were people like Jay-Z and Kanye West, for example, if we can still mention him.
Formerly known as,
who were coming to someone like Oswald Boateng, or even when Obama had his painting done by Kehinde Wiley, which is in the National Portrait Gallery in America, he chose to be dressed by Oswald Boateng. So why so many of these people were coming to be dressed by this, you know, British Ghanaian tailor? But people weren't picking up on that. What they were talking about there was the fact that American style had become more sophisticated, because basically the lines and the silhouettes that a Jay-Z, that a Kanye, that a Obama, or, you know, or any of these guys were wearing, they were attributing that to a change in American fashion. And I thought it was quite interesting, because what that was actually British fashion combining with Black British fashion, combining with African heritage, combining with African American culture to create something different. So that's what I would like to talk about within this documentary, if I ever get to make it.
So we're coming to the end of the show, and it would be nice to have a quick fashion minute or two with some of our quick fire questions. What's your most embarrassing fashion moment?
Oh, God. I've had a few of those. When I met my wife, prior to meeting her, now I only dress in black. Black is my uniform of choice. You asked me earlier, can you learn style? I think I've had to learn style. I wasn't born with this innate style.
I find that hard to imagine.
No, it's very true. It's very true. There have been a lot of cardigan moments. So my wife used to watch me hosting a photography show on Sky called Master Photography. On that show, I think I had a lot of fashion moments. There were some cardigan moments that were, yeah.
Need to be forgotten.
They need to be forgotten, but unfortunately they are there, available to watch on YouTube.
Digitally imprinted on history. Okay, yeah, then. Yeah. In your eyes, is there an unsung hero in the industry that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Wow, that's a great question. I suppose one of the unsung heroes for me is Charlie Allen. Charlie Allen, as a black tailor, you know, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant at his craft. And also Mark Powell, you know, although Mark has a big mouth and a big ego.
And a very unique style when it comes to tailoring.
A really unique style when it comes to tailoring. I think there are a lot of people who, you know, there's a lot of A-listers that love Mark's style in particular, and Charlie's as well.
Our last question for the listeners, what are you wearing today and why did you choose this outfit?
Okay, so I'm wearing Yohji Yamamoto, but I wore a hoodie today because of something that happened. My hoodie had a little prejudice against it the other day. I went to have lunch at a very well-known arts club.
Mm-hmm.
And the member I was meeting there was a few minutes late. So when I arrived there, I explained that who I was meeting and that he was going to be a few minutes late. And I asked if there was a cloakroom, and I took off the puffer jacket I was wearing because it was raining outside. And upon that, the young lady on the desk said to me that they have a very strict rule against people wearing hoodies in the club. And I was like, this is 2024.
Interesting.
Do we still have such an arcane rule against what people wear?
Or what's appropriate people to wear.
Yeah, or what's appropriate in 2024 for people to wear. And she said to me, you'll need to take it off. And I said to her, if I took it off, right, I have nothing on underneath it.
I love that.
So she said to me, I can get you a jacket. So I said, I'd still be naked under the jacket. So she says, I will get you a jacket. So I said to her, what is more important, your rule or my comfortability? Yeah, or my uncomfortability? And she proceeded to say, I will get you a jacket. So I realized in that instance, the rule was more important than whether I, as a human being, was comfortable. So that's why I'm wearing my hoodie today in protest.
Good for you. We love Yohji Yamamoto. And of course, you're all black, which is, as you say, your uniform or your outfit.
Or as you guys love to say in fashion, black is the new black.
Black is the new black. Simon Frederick, it has been a pleasure and it's been a fascinating conversation. And I hope that we will be talking again more in the future.
I'm sure we will.
Thank you. In our next podcast, I will be speaking to Dean Cleary Patterson about the presence of diverse models on the catwalk and magazine covers, and discussing the fluctuating trends in model representation. Be sure to check it out. Thank you for listening to Just a Fashion Minute with me, David M. Watts. If you haven't already, please give the show a follow on your podcast app and on Instagram. For more information, you can email us at podcast@justafashionminute.com. This show was produced by One Fine Play. Matt Cheney is the series producer. Kazra Ferrugia is the producer and editor. Selena Christofides is the designer. I have been your host, David M. Watts, and this has been Just Fashion Minute.